It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Right. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Luck of the Irish. Today is the one day where everybody's supposed to go out and celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And how do they do it? Most knuckleheads go out and sip Jameson and drink green beer. Well, having Irish heritage, having never been to Ireland, I gotta tell you, it's kind of weird. Right? I can imagine if, say, I lived in Italy, born and raised, lived in Italy. And some knucklehead from the Bronx came over and said, oh yeah, I'm Italian. You know, my ancestors came from Italy four generations ago and this is my first trip. I'd look at the guy and say, no, you're American. You might have Italian heritage, but stop calling yourself Italian. So that's why I don't call myself Irish. I say I have Irish heritage. Because I imagine if I went to Ireland, look at me and say, dude, you're Yankee, you're American, you know, bugger off. I'd imagine I'd hear something along that lines. Anyhow, point being, enjoy your St. Patrick's Day, especially those of you with Irish blood. Don't be idiots out there. I mean, it kind of goes without saying, don't go overboard. You know, and I got to tell you, really, the times where people tend to go more overboard on St. Patrick's Day is usually when they land on a Friday or a Saturday. All right, guys, it's Thursday. So unless you took Friday off, you don't have that excuse, all right? So just have fun. Have your corned beef and cabbage, your Jameson, and your green beer, which is ridiculous. What is this the only country in the world where on St. Patrick's Day they add blue food coloring to the yellow beer and make it green and everybody drinks it and they're happy-go-lucky? End up with green teeth and a green tongue? My goodness. Stick to Guinness or something like that. Anyhow, on with the guns. Well, constitutional carry is advancing through state legislatures across the country. Already, we have constitutional carry where you can avoid the jacket tax, as it were, in Alaska, Arizona, Vermont, and now Wyoming as of January or July 1st coming up. As you know, constitutional carry is very simple. It's a straightforward idea. If it passes, it simply just allows anyone who's eligible to own a handgun to carry it concealed without having to fill out a permit or get a permission slip or pay any jacket tax. I call it a jacket tax. I'm not the first one to coin it. It's basically you can carry open, but if you put a jacket on, you got to pay all these fees and go through all these classes and all this BS. Legislation would not get rid of current permit systems. What it does is merely offers the gun owners another option for exercising their right to bear arms. For reciprocity between states that don't otherwise have constitutional carry, citizens might still want to get a permit, but that's their choice under the constitutional carry system. Again, it's currently law in Alaska, Arizona, Vermont, and now Wyoming, where it will take effect July 1st. State Representative Chris Hulbert, a constitutional carry bill sponsor from Colorado, says we're simply abolishing the coat tax. In states where open carry is legal, you put your coat on, and now you have to pay the permit tax. Constitutional carry would make that permit tax voluntary, so that you can carry a concealed weapon without acquiring a permit. Wyoming. In Wyoming, the Jenkins Jaggi, J-A-G-G-I, constitutional carry bill was signed into law by Governor Matt Mead on March 2nd. The law will take effect July 1st. NASA Associates for Gun Rights staff worked extensively with the Wyoming gun owners to ensure passage of the bill, including killing several attempts to poison the bill with anti-gun amendments. Montana. House Bill 271, Representative Kearns, K-E-R-N-S, constitutional carry bill, passed the State House 54-41 in late February and is now in the Montana State Senate. Kern's constitutional carry bill will be heard by the Montana State Judiciary Committee. It was supposed to be heard yesterday, March 16th. Colorado, House Bill 1205, the Holbert Brophy Bureau-PHY constitutional carry bill, passed out of the state house on a 40-25 vote. The measure garnered the support of 7 Democrats. It faces an uphill battle in the state Senate, which is controlled by anti-gun Democrats. Both Representative Holbert and Senator Greg Brophy are longtime supporters of the Rocky Mountain Gun Owners and National Association for Gun Rights, which is based in Colorado. New Hampshire. The National Association for Gun Rights has been working with the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition in House Bill 536, which has been introduced in the New Hampshire legislature and is awaiting a hearing coming up soon. South Carolina. They've been fighting attempts by anti-gun Republican Thad Vyers to poison House Bill 3292, the Comprehensive Concealed Carry Reform. An anti-gun Republican scumbag turncoat. Different members have been instrumental in South Carolina in keeping the heat up on South Carolina legislators to adopt H-3292 with grassroots efforts. In Iowa, House Republicans in Iowa have bowed to pressure from Iowa gun owners and National Association for Gun Rights, who obviously wrote this article. Members in Iowa have pledged to pass the Sorensen-Pearson constitutional carry bill this session. Iowa gun owners has worked with NAGR to expose the backroom deals to kill constitutional carry. You can rest assured everybody's going to keep up the pressure. And also keep in mind, it's interesting. Now, the Iowa gun owners have gotten them to agree that there's supposed to be a committee hearing on the constitutional carry bill in Iowa next week. Keep in mind, Iowa is not traditionally that gun friendly. They've had their moments, but they've had their moments on the other side of the issue as well. So to even get this to a committee hearing, now that's not for the full state house, that's just a committee hearing. To even get it to a committee hearing in Iowa is pretty big. Now in a number of these states, things are not going to pass this session. It's always pushing, keeping up the heat, and eventually things tend to pass after they've had some success in other states. When other states see, okay, yeah, it's not going to be the Wild West, which really wasn't the Wild West. It's not going to be the Wild West movies that we so fear. Okay, crime is down. All is well. That's good. Guys, when crime is down across the country in a certain state or in a region, guess what? You don't have such high taxes to have to pay for things like crime control, because the people are doing it themselves by being armed. The criminals aren't looking at so many victims. They're looking at armed citizens. Save yourself some money and buy a gun. Stay tuned. There's plenty more to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back from the break, everyone. I'm going to talk with you now about a case in Portland, Oregon, where a judge has refused to separate the city of Portland from a suit against a police sergeant. Let me read this to you. The city of Portland today unsuccessfully asked a judge to dismiss the city as a defendant in a pending suit against Sergeant Kyle Nice as his employer stemming from an off-duty traffic encounter. This is really a personal situation, argued Richard Kuhn, a private attorney retained by the city. He didn't really take any steps as an officer. But attorney Greg Coffrey, representing motorist Neil Ruffin, says Nice, or Nice, N-I-C-E, asserted his authority as an officer that day by showing his badge, pulling his gun, and telling 911, "I'm a police officer." Judge Harry Breithaupt denied the city's motion to be dismissed from the case, as well as Nice's motion to drop the case against him. Quote, "I'm going to deny the motions. This will have to be for jury to decide," is what the judge ruled in the Munthonhom County Circuit Court. Let's see. Ruffin accused Nice of menacing and threatening him with a loaded firearm. His suit further attempts to hold the city responsible for Nice's off-duty behavior, arguing the city failed to discipline Nice for prior instances of misuse of force. Now, the April 3rd incident occurred about, the April 3rd last year, occurred about 2:47 p.m. in the afternoon in Washington County. Ruffin called 911 after he had, after he said Nice drove up to his car at a stoplight at Southwest Garden Home and Olson Road, honked his horn and flipped him off while mouthing an expletive at him. Okay. I talked about this. When was it? Yesterday? I talked about this on the show. If you're packing a gun, you don't get into traffic skirmishes. You know, you don't start mouthing off to people or flipping them off. Okay, you just don't do it. Because if it escalates, inevitably you're going to have to pull your gun. And you could have just risen above it. Okay, rise above it. Sometimes people need to hear things. Sometimes, just most of the time, just chill out. Okay? And here's the other thing. It says Ruffin called 911 after a guy honked his horn, flipped him off, and cussed at him. 911 is for life-threatening emergencies. Somebody flipping you off and cussing at you is not a life-threatening emergency. Now, the officer, Nice, told investigators Ruffin had previously run a red light and cut him off. Okay? So, call non-emergency number or one of your buddies and say, hey, come find this guy and follow him and pull him over if he keeps breaking the law. Something. Come on. Ruffin followed Nice's, the cop's, pickup truck, which pulled over around Southwest 80th Avenue. Ruffin said he opened his door and saw Nice standing behind his pickup with a pistol out. Okay. Stupid on Nice's part, the cop. Coffrey, the attorney, argued that Nice, the cop, based on his pre-trial deposition, ordered Ruffin to stay in his car, held up his badge, and told Ruffin, who was calling 911, "I am the police." Okay. If that's the case, even off duty, you hold up your badge, identify yourself as a cop, and in addition to that, you also have your gun out. I mean, that's just insult to injury. If you identify your cop and show him a badge, you're now acting in that lawful authority position. You've placed yourself into that harm's way. Now, reading from the officer's deposition, Nice, he says, "I said you need to stay in your car. Stay in your car. There's your stop. I'm directing you. That's something police do. That's police style giving directions," is what the attorney Coffrey argued. Let's see. Kuhn, the attorney for the city, countered that Nice, the cop, was in civilian clothes on an errand with his six-week-old son in his truck and was not making a traffic stop or issuing a citation. He was off duty, not getting paid by the bureau. He had his personal .45 caliber pistol on him, yet it was loaded with bullets from the police bureau. Okay. All semantics. Really, semantics. This cop is in civilian clothes. Big deal. A lot of cops wear civilian. More cops wear civilian clothes than wear uniforms throughout the country. Just so you know. On an errand with his six-week-old son in his truck. Don't get involved in traffic disputes. Then they both got out of their cars. He was behind him in a traffic stop position doing cop-related stuff. Personal gun, police ammo in it, whatever. He shouldn't have been doing this. Kuhn, that same attorney for the city, said it was just happenstance that he had bureau ammunition in his personal gun because there were some leftover bullets from the training division. Meaning embezzlement. I mean, he embezzled the bullets. It happens all the time. No big deal. But the legal word for that is embezzlement or theft. You know, however you want to look at it. Either one is a crime. Kuhn called Coffrey's argument that the city should be held liable far-reaching. Nice, the cop, represented by attorney Alex Williamson, had argued that Ruffin was the aggressor. He argued that Ruffin's decision to follow Nies and pull over elevated the dispute to a confrontation. Nobody forced Nies to pull over. He was behind Ruffin. Well, the judge said the jury's got to decide this. And last month, a Portland Police Review Board found Nies acted inappropriately, used profane language, and shouldn't have drawn his weapon during the off-duty encounter. He's currently assigned to, of all areas, the Police Training Division. Seriously? Wow. This guy's doing it all wrong. Everything from first cussing at the guy and flipping him off, to pulling over with him, to showing a badge, to holding a gun, with his six-week-old baby in the car. He's doing everything wrong. And he's assigned to the Police Training Division, which brings up the following point. I've made this many times, having been a former cop. I was a street cop in Las Vegas. Okay? If you have cops, training cops, who are supervised by other cops, and when there's investigations investigated by cops who went through the same cop training given by other cops, it's just a cop-on-cop, blinky-winky, sort of a blow-in-each-other's-ear kind of an affair. If this guy is assigned to the Police Training Division, he's a sergeant. He helps dictate some of the training. It's merely by that position. No place for this guy in the training division. None at all. If he's had other incidents and the department hasn't done anything about it, and then they give him a job in the police training division, what they're doing is they're condoning his actions. We condone this. It's okay. Go ahead. Not only is it okay, we think that you violate these policies and other people's rights so well, we should have you in a supervisor role in the training division helping to teach in-service and new cops coming in, the new recruits, how to efficiently violate rights and subvert other people's actions just as well as you do. You're so good at it. That's what they've done. That's what the Portland Police Department has done. Now, the Portland Police Department has a police chief. That police chief was hired by and works for the mayor and the city council, who are all elected. So the police chief needs to kiss the backside of just those people who are the mayor and the city council. It's all he has to worry about. They, on the other hand, have to worry about taking care of all of their constituents, which puts them in office. They need to hand it down and get this guy out of the police training division and put him somewhere where he no longer has any more conduct with the general public, or consider just canning the guy because he can't control himself and doesn't understand violation of people's rights shouldn't happen. He should be upholding the law, not destroying it and using it to his advantage. More after the break.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
We'll get back from the break. Now, everybody knows that there's a movement for sovereignty, individual sovereignty in America. They're sovereign citizens. Not even sovereign America, just calling themselves a sovereign citizen. Well, a detective in Sarasota, Florida was fired for trying to secede from the U.S. and become a sovereign citizen. Just last April, veteran Sarasota homicide detective, he went to the courthouse and he tried to secede from the U.S. Detective's name is Tom Laughlin. He filed a convoluted document declaring himself a sovereign citizen. The filing included a thumbprint on each page and a photocopy of 21 silver pieces, which is the price to become a free man. In doing so, this 42-year-old guy joined a small but growing group of U.S. citizens who claim they are not subject to federal law and they no longer have to pay taxes and that their homes are their embassies. Now, last week, he was fired for it. And what department insiders are calling one of the strangest internal affairs cases in recent memory, Laughlin has gone from a decorated and respected investigator to the subject of office jokes. Now, the same guy's handled some of the area's highest profile cases in recent years. His work led him to the conviction of some guy by the name of DeAndre Tunstall for gang-related murders. He solved the cold case killing of John Allman Jr. On Bird Key, and he teamed with U.S. Marshals to track down Willie James Kimball, a Sarasota man accused of beating a woman to death in New York City nearly 40 years ago. In his personal life, though, Laughlin was growing increasingly frustrated with the direction of the city and the county, He privately worried about Obamacare and that it was bad for his family, and that Sarasota leaders planned to lay off police officers and that the city might take his pension. His brother, also a sovereign citizen, he was recently charged in St. John's County, Florida, with trying to extort two Florida Highway Patrol troopers and later with bilking a Sarasota bank of $50,000, convinced Laughlin that he had to declare himself a free man. So Laughlin headed to the courthouse in April to legally renounce his citizenship, telling local, state, and federal officials that he would only communicate with them in writing. What the paperwork was done for was basically to get back to the roots, Laughlin told the internal affairs investigators. The Constitution, you know, the under God and go back to the meat of what it really is what he said. Now, about the same time, investigative reports showed that Laughlin's colleagues saw his behavior is really kind of starting to change around the office. He talked increasingly of a straw man account that allowed government to hide millions of dollars from citizens. All right. Colleagues told Internal Affairs that Laughlin wanted to pay off his personal debts through the straw man account, that he had made strange statements about global financial conspiracy. Guys, don't take your personal opinions to the office. That'll only get you in trouble. According to the Internal Affairs documents, Laughlin believed that Freeman-based ideas, that the red numbers on a Social Security card were clues to finding the account, and that birth certificates were related to secret ships berthed in a port that held access to millions of straw man dollars. It was one of those things that where, as he's trying to explain it to me, I'm looking up at him thinking, you're crazy, according to Detective Charles Reif, as he said in a statement to investigators. He says, I mean, what the hell? It didn't make any sense to me. Well, colleagues soon discovered that Laughlin had declared himself a free man. Many officers viewed the public records on the court's website, and concerns grew that his status could jeopardize criminal cases where he worked because he felt he was no longer a citizen, according to reports. Now, Laughlin, his beliefs put him directly at odds with his superiors, which had begun to watch out for sovereign citizens. The FBI listed those calling themselves sovereigns as a domestic terror threat following a series of violent attacks by members, including Terry Nichols of the Oklahoma City bombing, Joe Stack, who flew his plane into an IRS building in Austin, Texas, and Jerry and Joseph Kane, the father and son who fatally shot two Arkansas police officers last May. We don't know why they shot the Arkansas cops. At least I don't recall right now. Of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center wants to weigh in on this and estimates there's some 300,000 sovereign citizens in the U.S., and the radical movement has a huge presence online, according to, again, SPLC. Vehemently anti-American radical organization that should be on a terror watch list. From all of this, from websites that provide the documents to file for sovereign status in courts, to YouTube videos to which members openly threaten law enforcement officers. It's kind of dumb, guys. Don't draw attention to yourselves. Come on. The movement came to the Sarasota Police Department attention last year when an intelligent officer sent a bulletin warning officers to be wary of their interactions with sovereign citizens. In an interview just a week ago, Laughlin said he began to have second thoughts about the movement in June during a vacation with his brother. The two were pulled over in a North Florida interstate, and Laughlin's brother James berated a trooper, saying the state laws did not apply to him. James Laughlin later mailed documents to the trooper saying he should drop the citation and pay him $150,000 for violating his rights, or he would sue for $32 million. That's a little bit of craziness going on there. Here's a quote. That's when I knew this was something that I didn't want to be a part of, said Tom Laughlin, as he told the newspaper. I filed these documents without really reading them. All I want to do is make a political statement about the way things are going in this country. I didn't want to be involved in any kind of extremist movement. Okay. Well, department officials began an internal affairs case in July. Prosecutors determined that Laughlin had not broken any laws, but city attorneys openly fretted he may have violated his oath to office. Okay. Potentially an issue, but let's see. How many politicians have violated the same oath? We'll get back to that. By then, Laughlin says he had already taken steps to make the court records invalid. While the paperwork has no legal value, Laughlin found that they cannot be retracted and cannot be removed from a public website. Well, after a lengthy internal inquiry, supervisors accused Laughlin of associating with a hate group that advocates violence, not answering questions honestly, and using department computers to search websites on strawman accounts and sovereign citizens. Big deal. Most cops do far worse on a daily basis. A review board recommended he be suspended for 4 weeks and transferred out of the criminal investigation division. The suspension could have cost him about $10,000. Does this guy really make 10 grand a month? I guess pensions and who knows what else. Anyhow, but he was fired instead by Chief Mikel Holloway, who was on vacation this week and could not be reached for comment. City Manager Bob Bartholotta said Holloway conferred with him before the decision. Quote, "The honesty issue was very, very important to the chief," Bartholotta said. "He has to rely on his officers to be honest at all times, and I think he was the biggest factor in his decision. Laughlin has hired a private attorney and plans to appeal the firing. Laughlin now says he made clear that the Freeman paperwork was a mistake, and he realizes there should be consequences. He says, quote, "I screwed up and I deserve to take my lumps." He says, "I know what I did was stupid, but I don't think I deserve to lose my job over it. I have been a police officer since I was 19 years old. It's all I know." Okay. Then you don't risk it by doing dumb things. I mean, you guys gotta weigh risks. If you want to be so staunch on your beliefs and you want to make a statement, then more power to you, because you have the intestinal fortitude, the gonads to get it done. But realize you have stuff to lose. I have a big mouth, and I have no problem sharing my opinions with those who ask or that otherwise are interested. And I know full well that many, many, many times in my life, I have stood on my ground, stood on my principles, and it's cost me in some way, shape, or form in the end. It's happened many times before. It'll continue to happen because I stand on my principles. You, Laughlin, should have thought about that before. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on! I know that you are wrong at this.
All right, guys, welcome back. A California family has filed a lawsuit against an officer in the city of Orange over what they call the Whitehead shooting. Family of a man shot by an off-duty police officer, which it seems like this is happening all too often, has filed a lawsuit against the city of Orange, arguing it continued to employ the officer despite his alleged history of excessive force, violent outbursts, and domestic abuse. Now, you have to understand that they say alleged history of. So, you can't fire him for allegations. You've got to investigate. So, let's go through this. Let's see. Deanna Whitehead, Vernon Ray Whitehead Sr., Jennifer Lynn Hughes, and as next friends of H.H. a minor, and Carla Jane Jorgensen, filed a suit against Robert Arnold in the city of Orange on March 1st, in the Eastern District of Texas, Beaumont Division, pardon me, Orange, Texas, I thought it was California, in the Eastern District of Texas, Beaumont, Texas, which I actually spent 3 weeks in Beaumont, Texas, as a contractor for the Department of Defense, and I gotta tell you, it's an other than desirable place to hang. Let me put it to you like that. Let's see, according to the lawsuit, on July 26, 2010, James Whitehead, 28, a multi-decorated veteran attempted to return a valve, to O'Reilly's Automotive. Allegedly, the clerk refused to refund the purchase and began arguing with Whitehead. The clerk called the police, and while they were on their way, an off-duty Orange police officer intervened. Captain Robert Arnold confronted Whitehead, who was already in his car. The lawsuit states that the police officer then forced his way into the passenger side of Whitehead's vehicle and shot Whitehead in the chest. After the shooting, here's a quote, after the shooting, Captain Arnold unbelievably did what has been termed a victory dance, showing no remorse for a senseless killing. That's what the lawsuit alleges. The family maintains that Whitehead was unarmed and posed no threat to anyone. The city of Orange is accused of enabling its employees to act with deliberate indifference to the constitutional rights of individuals by tolerating misconduct of its police officers, by encouraging misconduct, by failing to adequately supervise, discipline, or train its officers. Really? We talked about this earlier in the show. In addition, city policies permitted hiring an officer with known records of violence, according to the suit. The lawsuit claims that Captain Arnold was unfit to be a police officer due to violent tendencies and domestic violence. The defendant is also accused of covering up and ignoring evidence that shows the liability of Captain Arnold and of the Orange Police Department for violations of James Whitehead's civil rights. Now, we're talking about a captain. That's pretty high. You have officer. Some places you have a corporal, but officer, sergeant, lieutenant, captain. Captains generally run like area commands, or they'll run like a division. Captain's high up. Now, the family is seeking damages for pecuniary loss. What the hell word is that? Loss of companionship and society. Mental anguish, exemplary damages, court costs, interest, blah, blah, blah. Everything. They're suing for everything. According to media reports, in November, an Orange County grand jury chose not to indict Arnold for the shooting. Really? Now, somebody who's not a cop that acted in exactly the same way, would they have been indicted? I'd venture to say yes. But since this guy had Captain in front of his name, and the initials of the police department, OPD, afterwards, he wasn't indicted. Now, Whitehead's friends and family members staged a protest outside the Orange County Courthouse in December, alleging that District Attorney John Kimbrough did not present a fair case to the grand jurors. Well, is that unexpected? District Attorney works with the cops. Arnold claims he got in the vehicle with Whitehead and told him to wait for other officers to arrive. Whitehead, who is white, became hostile, Arnold said, made racial remarks to him and began pushing him, trying to strike the African-American officer. Oh, so it's a black thing now. Arnold was terminated from his position with the police department, finally. So you have a black cop
that got into a white guy's car who had a dispute with the clerk over a valve. If you get a really, really fancy valve, it's about $5.50. Okay? It's a big deal. This cop bursts his way, forces himself into the car, and tells the guy, you got to wait for the cops. My response? Get the hell out of my car. Now, I'll tell you this. If something like that ever happened to me, a gun would be in the face of the person having forced their way into my vehicle. You're making threatening statements towards me. You've violated my property and my space. Get out. And here's some encouragement. Now imagine if that's what happened. Then the cop pulled his gun. And then Whitehead, the victim in this case, the dead guy, shot and killed Arnold. For what? Well, for tyrannous acts. Subverting Whitehead's rights. He can get in his car and leave. It's over a dispute over a small valve. Unless he reached across the counter and stole the money, I don't see any crime going on here. It's a dispute. And when the cops get there, what are they going to do? They're going to say, look, the store says this, you say that, whatever it is, don't come to this store anymore. You're not getting your $2 in for your valve back. That's what would happen. That's just the way things go in the police world. Anybody that's ever been a cop will tell you that. If they tell you something else, they have an agenda. I don't have an agenda. I'm just telling you. Now, it comes down to this guy getting killed over a valve worth $5 or less. A couple of dollars. I'm guessing it's a valve for like a car tire. I don't know. Who knows what kind of valve it is? Maybe it's a valve for an engine. So maybe it's more than $5. It just says a valve. It's 100,000 different types of valves in the world. Car parts are. Who knows? Anyhow. Point being, Whitehead is now dead because Arnold decided to get involved, an off-duty captain. Why? Why? I can tell you, guys, some cops just believe that being a cop defines their entire existence. It's 24/7, 365 and a quarter days a year. That's what defines a lot of cops. More cops than not. Me? I was a cop 40 hours a week. The remaining 136 hours a week, I think it's 176 in a week, the remaining hours in the week, I was just Bill Garnes. I was just me. I didn't go out looking for trouble. I didn't always carry my badge with me. I didn't always even carry my gun at the time. I guess most of the time I did. I've been carrying a gun for years. So I guess that was the time where I really started. But I didn't always carry my badge. I didn't, you know, it's like, you know, hi, I'm Bill, right? You know, what do you do for a living? I didn't say, I'm a cop. I'd tell him, I work for the police department. Really? Are you a cop? Well, yeah, 40 hours a week, I'm a cop. Really? You know, you ask somebody who they are, and they'll oftentimes give you the answer of what they do for a living. You know, my name's Bill. I'm a janitor. No, I'm Bill. 40 hours a week, I clean stuff up. Okay? Or, my name's Bill. I'm a chef. Okay, well, you know, that might be so. You know, you've gone through training, you got your chef. When you do this whole thing, I'm a cop. That most of these cops just, it's ingrained in them to want to do it constantly. So, when something happens in front of them and they're off duty, even if it's a tiny little dispute, they want to get involved. If it's a major thing, guys, get involved. Anybody with some sort of reasonable thought should say, okay, even an off-duty cop, if it's something, a big deal, should at least try to handle the situation, if he can do safely by himself, until the uniform on-duty cops arrive. I'm going to chastise you for that. But simple dispute garbage, and then somebody ends up dead over it? You've got to be kidding me. This is the sort of thing that should be trained absolutely not to get involved in and should be discouraged at all levels of police force. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll be back tomorrow. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.